Hello, everyone. I'm John Melke, and this is Parkside Today. We'll call this edition Alumni Day. We'll be joined by alumnus John Knepper to explore his career transition from Kenosha School's band director to professional speaker. But first, it's a pleasure to welcome Chris Rosen. Chris serves our area as a mental health specialist in a crisis center and recently authored his debut book, The Immortality Recipe. Chris, welcome to Parkside Today.
Thank you, John. I'm happy to be here.
I kind of feel like I'm asking the Star Wars question. Who is Rey? Where did she come from? But in your book, The Immortality Recipe, we get a feeling for who Teal is. But from an author standpoint, where did Teal come from?
Well, the idea just came to me in a flash of inspiration for the book. It was on New Year's Day 2015. I was looking at a journal that's actually featured as the cover art. And the idea for the plot just came to me in a flash about a girl who suspects her grandma's secret recipe book is a spell book and discovers an order that protects the secrets of living forever. As far as Teal, where does inspiration come from? Where does she come from? Maybe some of my own experiences and imagination.
Mm-hmm. Now, you describe the book as fiction for youth. And what would you say is kind of the target age group for The Immortality Recipe?
I wrote it for the middle grade, but actually kind of like Disney, where he wrote for the child in all of us, there's been a lot of adults who have told me they've enjoyed reading it as well.
Yeah, good. Without giving too much of the book away, how much of it are you drawing from a personal experience in it? As I read through, I thought, this could very easily been, you know, a whole bunch of people I know who have discovered something from relatives or friends or a past. And did you draw upon your own personal experiences?
In some ways, like the setting of Ivy Cottage, a Victorian manor, Teal living with next door to her grandma. Mm-hmm. Some of that was drawn from my experience growing up in Racine next to my grandma, mixed with our cabin in the North Woods, mixed with, you know, now I live in the historic area of Racine, mm-hmm. so I enjoy Victorians, and I was inspired a little bit by the mansions in Lake Geneva, an area I enjoy. So it's kind of like a composite of a lot of things.
Mm-hmm. And what you talked to just when we started about the kind of the flash of inspiration, growing up, and I know you did some writing in high school, and was it always kind of in the back of your mind to say, you know, someday I'm writing a book? I may not know what it is right now, but someday I'm going to do that.
Oh, yes. I knew since I was a kid that I wanted to be a writer. And then my senior year at Park High School in Racine, I won an essay contest here at Parkside and read my essay on the significance of the I Have a Dream speech, the Dr. King celebration.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And my family all came. So that influenced me to come to Parkside. And I also won the Senior Writer Award for a standing achievement at Park High School, too. And so then when I came to Parkside, I knew that I wanted to write. And at first I was an English major, but I switched to communication to be a little more broad. Mm-hmm. But I still knew that I wanted to write. It just, with work and life and family, it actually wasn't until about 5 years ago that I finally, you know, sat down, started working on it.
Wow. And do you remember when you did the piece for the MLK event? When was that time frame?
That was back in 2003.
Oh, okay. So I probably heard that because I was involved with the MLK celebration in those days for about, started here in 2001 and probably was involved with it until about 2008 or so.
Okay,
so,
good.
Yeah, I may have heard that. What do you find interesting interesting about writing that, you know, that makes you want to continue to do it?
Well, it's a way to express yourself and, you know, just enjoy that creative process, give birth to something and leave something behind as well. Actually, I had a grandma who was a writer too.
Oh.
And she recently passed away, so I dedicated the book to both my grandmothers, including her.
Oh, that's nice.
But seeing that she wasn't going to you know, see the finished result of her book is what inspired me to do this, to publish it and go to Amazon and make it happen. And I actually even continued and published her children's picture book recently. It's called The Little Pine Tree.
Oh, okay.
Her name was Iona Post, and it was illustrated by someone she approved named Tatiana Yvette Contreras. So that's also available on Amazon.
So that kind of leads into my next question. So you're motivated to write something. You want to do that. How challenging was it for you, or did you have an idea of how you would go through the process of going from I'm writing this to I'm actually getting this published and somebody could go buy it someplace?
Well, it happened kind of a fast decision of if I was going to go the traditional route or that, you know, self-publish on Amazon. But I think a lot of it is overcoming that fear. You know, there was a lot of perfectionism, like, oh, is it ready yet? And once I saw that and I wanted to be able to tell my grandma I wrote the book, she did get to read it in draft form. But that's really what gave me that, you know, instant freedom to be able to publish and bring this out to the world. As far as writing it, it was just something that became part of my routine over the years. I worked on it on and off a little bit each day. And that's why I encourage people too, if you have some kind of a dream or a goal, to just get started on it and not always just say someday, because you can't take it for granted that there'll be a tomorrow. Your whole life could pass you by.
Right.
So
right.
Just, you know, getting into that flow, even if it's 5 minutes a day.
Sure, sure. What when you attended UW Parkside, what do you pull from experiences here attending the university when you think about things that you want to write?
Well, I did have some writing classes, and I loved being a student here. I worked on the Ranger News. We went on a convention to Washington, D.C. Actually, Teal's dog in the book is named Ranger, and that comes from being a Parkside Ranger.
Yeah, yeah, interesting. What was it about, what motivated you to make the decision to attend UW Parkside over going someplace else?
I think when I was here with all my family reading the book, I just fell in love with the school. It's a beautiful campus, you know, here set in Petrifying Springs. I love the architecture. In fact, the architect, I forget his name. I know he was a Japanese man.
Yeah, yeah. But he works out of St. Louis.
Yeah, it reminds me of Frank Lloyd Wright's style, where it has like some of the same materials inside and out and incorporates nature. And I just loved that I could commute. I still lived at home for a while when I was a student, but I was active in student activities. In fact, just yesterday I got together with some of my fraternity brothers for breakfast.
Yeah.
And I was a few minutes early before the interview, so I even like walked around and reminisced, and
yeah,
a lot of good memories here.
Yeah. And a little bit, we're going to talk with John Knepper, another UW Parkside alumnus who spent a lot of years as a band director in Kenosha Unified School District. And one of the questions I wanted to ask both of you is, as someone who I grew up in the Racine area. We're both Park Panthers, by the way, and although you know about 100 years apart, so that I don't know if it counts or not. But so I go away to school, and I don't see the buildings of UW Eau Claire very often. Every once in a while, if I'm driving by on I-94, I can look and maybe spot towers in the distance. But what does it feel like as an alum to be so close to the university that you attended?
Well, actually, I've been back over the years a few times for conferences and so forth in the new student center. But it feels like coming home. Like as I was driving up, it just was such a great feeling to be back on campus and just remember some of the best years of my life.
Sure, sure. Now, without getting too much into your I'll call it your day job of doing what you do and helping people as a mental health specialist. But are there times when you start thinking about, oh, here's an idea or here's something I might be able to write about in the future? Or do you find inspiration from your own professional career to think about something you might do in your writing career?
Maybe for future projects, but I really just been so busy with, you know, this, getting this one, giving birth to it, and helping my grandma with hers, I haven't really thought about the next one yet. But inspiration, it can come from anywhere. So absolutely, there could be things from anywhere that might, you know, want to bring forth the next book.
Sure. As a person where friends, acquaintances know that you've done this, that you've published this book, do you get a lot of questions about, gee, how did you do that? I might like to do something like that. Do you have advice that you give to people that may ask that?
Yeah, I think a lot of people, especially like Teal in the book, who's a big reader, but she really wants to be a writer, and she's just kind of blocked, or it might be just sitting down to do it and then overcoming the fear to publish.
Yeah, and I again don't want to give too much of the book away, so that you don't if you're out there and you're listening and you go, I might like to do that. By the way, you can find the Immortality Recipe on Amazon, and that's a place where you can get it. I think you can download it to Kindle. You can do all that stuff, right?
Yes, and an audiobook should be coming soon as well.
Good, good. But I thought it was pretty cool that, you know, that at the end there was a little bit of a circle that I didn't quite see coming in reading through the beginning. And how did that, do you kind of know where it's going to end up, or as you're writing it, does it kind of come to you and you say, oh, here's a way we could go about ending this story?
Well, some people plot everything out and know where it's going to go. I had just the synopsis of it when I was originally inspired, so it would just kind of be day to day. You know, I went, it was kind of wild, wild west. I didn't always know exactly what scene would happen and where it would go. So
yeah. Yeah.
Just one day at a time.
Yeah. Excellent. Excellent. We're talking with Chris Rosen, UW Parkside alumnus, who has authored the book, The Immortality Recipe. It's his debut book. What's on the horizon for Chris Rosen, the author?
Well, I'm open to receiving the next idea soon as this one, and I'm enjoying what I'm doing in the mental health field and just enjoying life, trying to be more present.
Yeah, yeah, well, that's good. Well, I enjoyed, thanks for sharing the text with me. I enjoyed reading through that. Good luck with the Immortality Recipe, and good luck with whatever is next for Chris Rosen, the author. Thanks for being with us on Parkside Today.
All right. Thank you, John.
Okay. Next, I'm pleased to welcome John Knepper. John directed student bands in Kenosha and was selected as Teacher of the Year in the Kenosha Unified School District. He also received the Herb Cole Educational Fellowship Award. Today, John enjoys a second career as a professional speaker. He's also the proud father of UW Parkside campus photographer Alyssa Knepper. John, thanks for taking time to be with us on Parkside Today.
Thanks for having me here, John.
Okay, so your website says, John Knepper, motivational speaker. Where did the motivation come from to be a motivational speaker?
When I was a sophomore in high school, actually.
Really?
Yes, I went to a student council event at Green Lake, and there were 400 people in the audience, and there was this man on stage. And he was captivating. He was funny. He was exciting. He did some magic. I went, and years later, when I became a speaker, I went, that's where it started.
Oh,
because
wow.
I remember sitting in the audience going, I want to do that.
Yeah.
I want to be him.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I can pinpoint it back to when I was a sophomore.
Wow.
It's in another century, but that's when it happened.
Well, that's, you know, sometimes that is. You see someone and there's that inspiration that says, I'm going to do that.
Right. Exactly.
Do that. Yeah, as a motivational speaker today, how do you or do you incorporate past experiences as an educator, band director, into your current role? What's that dynamic like?
I draw from all of those experiences. You know, being an athlete, I was in gymnastics, football. I have a black belt in karate, so I draw from that. I'm a musician. I play trombone. I draw a lot of stories from that.
Mm-hmm.
Also, just being around, interacting with people, because my whole thing is I really want to change the world one conversation at a time.
Yeah.
And those stories are all of our stories are rich. And I love to tell stories, you know, because it's what connects me to other people.
Well, being the brother of a person who taught in Kenosha Unified and vocal music for, you know, for a long time. I won't say how many years, but a long time. And, you know, I see what people who do what you do. I mean, you are motivating young people to be what they can be, right? To bring out the best in them, or maybe bring out something that they didn't even know that they had inside. So the motivation is even there as an instructor in Kenosha Unified, right?
Oh, exactly. What a perfect place to hone those skills. Talking with students who often, you know, the thing that I keyed in is, what are the things they're saying about themselves? And it was really enlightening to me, because that whole thing about, oh, I'm not good enough, I don't get it, I don't understand, and how to get them past that language that I found that was often limiting their potential, and getting them to look at something that could move them forward.
Yeah. What was the most fun about being a band director, teaching students music?
Oh, boy. Well, the students. Really, the students. I mean, I really, now that I'm retired from that, I miss that interaction with students. They're funny, you know, and they'll tell you stories, and they'll do things that are quirky. And, you know, I taught middle school, and part of my personality fit right in with that, because I would do quirky things with them too, and they would laugh, and we'd, you know, have... The thing I wanted them to get was that making music was a cool thing, that it was, we bring all of our quirkiness and kind of leave it at the door and make music together.
Sure, sure. Yeah, yeah. When you think back to attending UW-Parkside, do you draw on that experience either when you were an educator or now as a motivational speaker?
Both. There were a couple of classes, and I was thinking about that. I did my teacher certification through Parkside, and one class was just a basic human development class, and the other one was educational psychology, and I still reference things that those professors said.
Wow.
You know, there were things that, you know, one thing was in the human development course, it said, if the relationship is good, it will survive the struggles. You know, if you have an argument, but the relationship is good, the relationship will survive.
Yeah.
And I think about that as I'm working to connect with people about how to build those relationships so that you weather the storms okay. That was one, and the educational psychology about learning to read people, you know, their emotions. Like I said, you know, working with middle school and high school kids, they had a lot of things that they were dealing with.
Yeah.
And how could I be more effective with them by picking up on cues that I learned through those courses when I was here at Parkside.
Yeah. As a motivational speaker, and the different I'll say clients, different audiences that are interested in having you come and speak to them, is there kind of a common thread as to why they want you to come and speak, or does that vary?
I think it varies. The biggest thing, like I say, I talk about communication as a way to connect with other human beings, and the thing that I want that I convey in my talks is that connection with other human beings is what makes our lives rich. And where that fails is where we often have problems in our lives, with in our relationships. And so it's really about connecting and engaging. I have a program I call The Art of Engaged Conversation.
Okay.
And it's really about how we can connect with one another. And it stemmed from a doctor friend of mine who always used to tell his medical students, if you want to learn medicine, you have to learn people's stories.
Yeah.
And so I've taken that, if you want to learn people in general, you got to learn their stories.
Right.
Because, and it doesn't take that long, and it's not that hard. But I find a lot of times people are not very good at that. You know, like they get stuck in a lot. They get stuck in the whole idea, it's all about me. Oh, and the conversation is about to end, and they go, oh, how about you? Oh, great. See you later. You know, so it's really about engaging with other people, and engaging not only with other people, but kind of the things that make us tick. That's the thing I try to convey too. It's like, what is it? What is the dream? What is the passion? How are you connected to it? Or how are you disconnected? And so if there's a disconnect, how do I get people to find that connection again?
Yeah. When you're speaking and you're talking to whatever audience it might be, what's the what's the feeling or what's the emotion when I got to believe that there's some point where you know that you're connecting. You can tell that you're connecting with that audience. And what does that feel like as a professional speaker?
Some of it's laughter. You know, if I say something that makes them laugh, it's like, okay, at least they heard what I said because they laughed at it. And that laughter is infectious and it's encouraging. I often try to set up my audiences so people can see each other, you know, so that if this side of the room got the joke and the other side didn't, they might laugh. Or if a light comes on for somebody, they're going to read off of each other.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, too, to be up in front of a group and know that I'm not connecting with them. And what does that take? Like, how do I shake them out of that kind of slump they're in? A lot of times I love getting people up and being face-to-face with each other and interacting, having conversation, doing, you know, even if it's a larger audience, having people do kind of the team-building things that get them to interact with each other. Because then it's not so much about me, it's about them interacting and saying things to each other. And the energy in the room changes almost immediately when that happens.
Yeah, something that engages them. They almost have to get in, if they're brought up and they're not just seated, they almost have to get engaged.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Interesting. I asked this of Chris, and the setup was that as a person who graduated from UW-Eau Claire, I don't see my alma mater like every day. You know, every once in a while, if I'm driving by on I-94 and I look in the distance and I can see a couple buildings, but basically I don't see it every day. What does it feel like as a person who attended here and the fact that you're in the area and, you know, with your daughter working here, that you're really still really connected to the university? And I'm kind of interested in that perspective of what it feels like to be that connected on almost a daily basis.
Well, when I was teaching, I drove past it every day, for one thing.
Yeah.
And my bachelor's degree is from Michigan State University.
Oh, okay.
I've only been back there twice. With Alyssa being here, I'm often on campus. I like the feel of this place. When I was teaching, State Solon Ensemble was here. And so I got to see the people that I was connected to musically, either through Parks, like Laura Rexroth has been our guest conductor.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So there's a lot of connections here, especially through the arts, that I keep coming back and revisiting for all of those reasons. You know, like I say, Solon Ensemble, Alyssa's here.
Yeah.
And it's kind of fun to be on campus where I became certified.
Yeah, yeah, right. Any particular type of, any particular type of audience or group that you would say, oh, that's, I know this will be a fun one to speak to, or or is there one that, or are they all kind of, it just depends on who the people are once you start talking with them?
It kind of depends on who the people are. If they're connected to what I'm saying, we can have fun pretty much at any level. One, I spoke for I can't remember the name, but it was a student group. It was a student service group, but it was up in Milwaukee. And they were involved, energetic. They were willing to come up and participate. And we had a lot of fun. We really had a good time because they were there connecting with their peers and stuff. And the energy in the group was really, it was infectious. You know, we had a lot of fun. So like I say, that sometimes it doesn't work to get a group up and involved and it's flat. Those are not so fun.
Yeah.
But the groups that are having a good time, and you can always tell too, because the volume goes up in the room and people are talking, they're laughing. Those groups are fun to work with.
Yeah. What, now how long have you been doing the professional speaking gig?
I've been doing professional speaking on and off since the late 90s.
Oh, okay.
But there were times where I was working it more consistently, times not. I had two young girls at the time, and I was involved with them. But more intentionally, more specifically, for about 2 years now.
Okay. And how have you, looking at your doing a self-evaluation, how have you progressed or changed as a professional speaker over that time period?
Skill level, for one thing. You know, the idea in our heads that we think we're better than we are. You know, there's a learning curve, you know, getting more comfortable with the audience, finding out what material worked, what didn't.
Yeah.
And that whole self-reflection as a speaker, too. You know, I always have to keep telling myself, first of all, if I'm preparing a speech, that it's like this inner dialogue that says, John, you need to listen to this. You know, like, I'm not speaking to them because they need to change. Mm. The message I'm bringing is because I need to hear it. Mm. And so it's always a good check for me. It's like, are you listening to this?
Yeah.
You really need to get this. And again, I'm speaking to myself.
Yeah.
And it really, just to keep remembering, it's not about me. It's about them and what they need and what they want and what their expectations are for the presentation and what they're going to get out of it. It helps to keep me humble.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What, is it hard to break into getting speaking gigs?
Yes.
Yeah.
Some people have a knack for it and they're working all the time. That's what I'm working on now. I've been involved in a marketing program because it really is all about getting the name out there and outreach, and because otherwise how are people going to find you?
Yeah.
So it's really about outreach. And that's the thing where the consistency is really important about marketing every day and sending those emails out and making those phone calls. And but if the message is right and the audience is right, then it's not so hard.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice photography on your website, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
I have a photographer in the family.
Oh, yeah. That's right. That's right. No, I went to the site. The site looks nice. You know, it has a nice look to it. It's easy to get through. And
oh, good. Thank you.
What sort of advice, not that you want competition in the professional speaker business, because the more competition you have, the more probably more difficult it gets, but what kind of advice would you give to somebody who's thinking about breaking into that?
Several things. First of all, again, about being really clear and being consistent. Like, what is it you want to, who is it you want to speak to?
Right.
And what is the message you want to get? Mm-hmm. Because if you're clear about the message and clear about who the target market is, that helps.
Mm-hmm.
Because then all of your marketing material, all of your efforts go into that funnel, so to speak, and you're very specific about who that audience is.
Yeah.
And the story that you bring to that audience is what they want to hear.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want graphs and charts and PowerPoints and 1,000 points of data, because they can't keep up with it. But they can keep up with your story and getting really clear on what your story is and why it resonates with you will resonate with an audience.
Yeah. Anything that stands out in your mind as maybe like, oh, that was a really fun speaking gig, that there's one that you go, that was great. Or maybe the other side of the coin, where one where you go, wow, that couldn't have been over fast enough. That was not where I needed to be.
There's definitely both. I mean, the times when I've stumbled, fallen, wished it was over. Yeah, there's definitely those. I've spoken with a lot of Rotary clubs because they're always looking for speakers.
Uh-huh, yeah.
So I had one in November that was really fun. It was a group down in Barrington, Illinois, and the audience was interactive. They laughed. They enjoyed the presentation. We had some really good conversation afterwards. I always love to stay afterwards and talk to people because that's where the real interaction comes.
Sure.
You know, standing up on stage, there's that separation between us. But I like to hear other people's stories. You know, and I always invite them to come up and share with me. What was something that, you know, please come up and share your story or something that resonated with you so that we can have a connected conversation.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, last question. Do you live in a van down by the river?
Oh, it's that obvious. Do I live in a van down by the river? No, I'm fortunate enough to have a house, and it's a nice house. I do live in the Kenosha-Racine area, and...
But
no van down by the river.
Yeah, that Chris Farley, whatever he was supposed to be in that Saturday Night Live gig, I thought, oh man, that was some wild stuff that he did. Well, John, first off, thank you very much for taking time to come out today and be on Parkside today, and continued success with your speaking career, and we hope you'll come back again and chat with us.
Oh, I'd be glad to. Thanks for having me, John. I really enjoyed it.
John, continued success with your speaking career, and thanks for taking time to talk with us today. We've been joined by UW Parkside alumni Chris Rosen, talking about his debut book, The Immortality Recipe. And we just finished a great conversation with John Knepper, former Kenosha Schools band director turned motivational speaker. To hear past editions of Parkside Today, visit uwp.edu/parksidetoday. Thanks for listening.